Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show here. It's Saturday, and we're sitting here for 2 hours talking about current events and taking your phone calls. Our phone number, as always, is 800-259-9231. Jared is sitting in the control room, twiddling the dials, flogging the giant mutant hamster, and answering the phones. So during the course of the show, anytime you feel like you would like to join us on the air, pick up the phone, punch the buttons, and call right in. Now, obviously, we're continuing this last week just to see more signs of, well, how can I put this delicately, disappointment in our new president who campaigned on change we could all believe in. And unfortunately, the problem with beliefs, and I've said this many, many times, beliefs are a means to get you to act as if something is true, even though it may not be. We are raised from our youth to allow beliefs to dominate our behavior and our thought processes. We are bribed as young people to allow belief to control us. If you believe in the Easter Bunny, you get chocolate. If you believe in Santa Claus, you get a bicycle. If you believe in the tooth fairy, you get money under your pillow. And on and on and on. You're always, you know, whether it's in school or your home or in your church, you're given little treats so that you grow up being used to letting beliefs control how you behave. And the purpose of that is very simple, because those who control those beliefs, who tell you what those beliefs are, now can control you. So as a general policy and philosophy of WhatReallyHappened.com and of this radio show, I don't believe anything. I want to wait until I see the facts and the reality and the truth. Beliefs are chains that are used to hold free minds slaves. No chains of steel ever imprisoned a human being tighter than the chains we make of our myths and fables and legends with which we are raised from our extreme youth. Now, having wandered off the reservation into that moment of philosophy, I want to come back here. We're talking about Barack Obama, who I viewed as marginally preferable to John McCain, and he's proving just how marginal he really is. As you know, this last week, he issued an executive order closing the Guantanamo prison. This has become a symbol of some of the darkest activities of the United States over the last 8 years, a place where people were taken and tortured very often without actually having done anything. And that remains a really, really big open issue here. Now, Barack Obama is closing the prison. It was going, yes, say he kept his promise. But closing a building wasn't what it was all about. The issue was the people held inside of it for 6, going on 7 years, many of whom have been subjected to torture, many of whom, as it turns out, were absolutely innocent of any wrongdoing. They were simply grabbed and sold to the American forces just for the reward money. And so this has become a real political hot potato, because the U.S. government, really, if we were a moral nation, we would apologize to these people, we'd pay them for the last 7 years of their lives, and we'd send them back home again. But the problem is, once they do that, they're going to start talking to the world press about exactly what has been done to them. And that's an issue the United States cannot allow to have happen. So they're talking about, well, you know, we're closing Guantanamo, see, we've made a wonderful thing, but we're going to take the prisoners, we're going to stick them someplace else. And Obama's declaration did not address the framework that had been set up for aggressive interrogation, which is a polite term for beating the crud out of these poor people until they confess to anything. You know, I mean, you know, if we are to believe the U.S. government, they've got the guy who set fire to the Hindenburg down there in Guantanamo. And thank goodness we finally identified who Jack the Ripper actually is. So it's a cosmetic change at best. Now, they're circulating a story, you've probably heard it all over the mainstream news, about how one of the prisoners they released is now the number two Al-Qaeda in Yemen. The only source for this story is a posting on a supposedly Al-Qaeda website. Now, in the past, we have tracked these Al-Qaeda websites down, and they always go back to servers in Texas or Virginia. I remember one of the big Al-Qaeda websites, it turned out the server that was running it was like 2 blocks from the Central Intelligence Agency. So given how many lies we've been told about nuclear bombs and all the rest of it, you know, this very convenient story about how one of the released prisoners has become a major figure in Al-Qaeda, it comes along just when the United States needs to build consent to keep these people locked up. And the issue isn't really Al-Qaeda, because Al-Qaeda is just a fake manufactured enemy. If you've ever read the book 1984 by George Orwell, and they had this enemy, Emmanuel Goldstein, and you were all supposed to hate him. And the government would say, okay, it's time for the two-minute hate. You just boo and hiss and hate the people because they're the ones we blame all the bad things on. And, of course, there was no Emmanuel Goldstein. It was a completely manufactured image. And the same thing with Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda's literal translation in Arabic is the base, as in the database of the Mujahideen fighters that were aiding the CIA against Soviets in Charlie Wilson's war. In Arabic slang, it means the toilet. And Al-Qaeda means I'm going to the toilet. Now, if you're going to create a terrorist organization to threaten the great Satan of the United States, are you going to call yourself the toilet? I mean, I don't know how, you know, I've never really met a real terrorist. I've met a lot of the fake ones, you know, Mossad and CIA people trying to pretend to be terrorists. And I've never met a real terrorist. I can't imagine they'd react too well to being sniggered at. You know, hello, I'm from the toilet. Silence! I kill you! So, you know, it's just a big made-up thing. And so this story about how this one prisoner has gone back to being the number two of Al-Qaeda, and they don't have any photos or anything to document it. It's just a claim made on a website of dubious provenance. But it's being bandied all around to sort of trick Americans into saying, well, yes, we better keep all these bad people locked up. Well, if they're bad people, prove it in a court of law. Go in there with the prosecutor, present the evidence to a jury of their peers. That may be a little hard to get to, but a jury of 12 Americans, because Americans, by and large, tend to be honorable and fair and just people. Go in there and make the case and let the jury decide. And if there isn't evidence that actually proves these people did bad things, send them home. Don't keep them locked up just because they're an embarrassment. If you don't want an embarrassment, don't do embarrassing things. When we, the people, voted Barack Obama into office, we did it because we wanted a change. We wanted a change from the U.S. violating our Constitution. And Obama took that oath. He flubbed it. He went back and redid it again. But the oath includes preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Now, a lot of people have written in to say, well, it doesn't say he's got to follow it in that oath. Just he's got to preserve it, you know, lock it up, put it in a safe, and he's taking care of it. Doesn't mean he's got to follow the rule. Yes, it does, because the first part of that oath is to faithfully fulfill the office of president, and the limits of the presidency are in that Constitution. The president must obey the Constitution. He is the executive branch of the government. The Constitution limits the government. The president must obey the Bill of Rights, and that Bill of Rights must apply to everybody, or it is not worth the parchment it is written on, or the hemp paper. So this idea we had over the last administration, the weasel wording, well, they're not really citizens, and it's not really U.S. territory, therefore the Constitution doesn't apply. It was a U.S. base in Cuba, and the excuse was, well, because it's Cuba, we can go ahead and violate the Constitution with these people. That you can't do that because we have justified our incursions into other places like Vietnam and Korea and interfering with other countries like Iran and the Philippines by saying we're bringing these people American-style democracy. So in that context, the theory of operation is wherever there's a U.S. presence, we are bringing them the U.S. system of government and its civil protections. So this whole torture thing down in Guantanamo was in the heart of a U.S. military base. Because it was outside the United States, the Bill of Rights doesn't apply, and they can do whatever they want. Well, if the Bill of Rights isn't a right, if it can be switched off at the government's will, then it's not rights. It's simply indulgences a master grants to their servant when and only when it's convenient for the master. And that's not what the United States is supposed to be about. We're going to take a break here. Pick up the phone, call in, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231, and we'll be right back after these words from our sponsors.
to Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. If you're watching over the studio webcam, you'll probably be able to see the sun is finally starting to come up. Looks like it's going to be a pretty pleasant day here in Hawaii. A little cool, actually. Of course, it's cool all over the country right now. I was listening to the weather reports of some of the weather in Minnesota, where the wind chills got it like 30 below. Boy, that's just amazing. And, of course, there's probably our control room technicians at GCN are all bundled up and looking like little puffy Eskimos sitting there in the control room as they hack the ice off of the control panel. Anyway, getting back to Barack Obama and his first 100 days and definitely the end of the political honeymoon, we're again seeing more and more indicators that in point of fact, the administration of Barack Obama is not a significant change for the direction of the country. We're still headed in a very, very bad direction. And I'm going to start using a phrase here, same excrement, different sphincter, to sort of explain what's going on here. I think I can get that past the FCC. I'm not getting any indications of panic from the control room on that one. So that's the phrase that we're going to use here. Now, apparently yesterday, the Barack Obama administration urged a federal judge to delay enforcement of a ruling favoring plaintiffs in a lawsuit challenging President Bush's warrantless eavesdropping program. Basically, in a nutshell, these individuals had gone to court claiming that they were being spied on by the U.S. government without warrants, clear violation of the Bill of Rights. The courts had said, there does seem to be an indication there, and ordered the government to provide information relevant to the case. The government turned around and said, oh, no, this is all top secret stuff. It's all national security. You can't give this to the plaintiffs or you'll compromise national security and the terrorists will have won. And the courts basically said, that's nonsense. There is no such thing as the government being immune from a civil court or criminal court subpoena. And so the judgment came down that the government did have to turn over these documents to the plaintiffs to basically lay out the extent to which they had been spied on by the government without warrants. And so with that background, Barack Obama has basically come out and said, okay, the court said the government has to turn over these documents, but please don't do it. In other words, Barack Obama is one of the first acts in office. He's not even out of the first week at the job. And he's saying to the courts, don't do what the courts say to do. And not only is this an inappropriate exercise of executive authority, it's tantamount to obstruction of justice. When the courts have said that plaintiffs have a right to see government documents regarding the spying that the government is doing on them without warrants, and Barack Obama is saying, no, they don't. This isn't change we can believe in. It's not change at all. It's the same thing. Obama is protecting the crimes of the previous administration. And as I mentioned yesterday when we were talking about the United Nations may come in and charge Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld with war crimes for the use of torture, regardless of what the U.S. does, it's going to put Barack Obama and his administration in a real corner. Because how can they claim to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States at the same time they're writing a get-out-of-jail-free card to some of the worst criminals this country has ever seen? So we're going to go to the phones. We've got Renee waiting from North Carolina. Aloha, Renee. Welcome back to the show. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about what you opened the show with, beliefs, because as we know, so many of the very popular beliefs are not true. One that particularly drives me crazy, because I hear very intelligent people saying this, is what goes around comes around. Now, very often these people have been a victim of something, so they want desperately to believe that justice is coming their way. But what they fail to think about is if that what goes around comes around thing is true, what happened to them would have never happened to them in the first place unless they did something to deserve it. And many times they are victims of predators, and they have done absolutely nothing to deserve what happened to them. But let me tell you, when you confront people about this belief, they go absolutely berserk because it's a comforting belief. It makes them feel good that there's some sort of justice in the universe, and it's like trying to yank a pacifier out of a baby's mouth.
Well, you know, the most extreme embodiment of that theory, of course, is this idea that after you die, there's an afterlife where everything gets set aright. I mean, this goes back to ancient times, all throughout medieval period. The church was always teaching, well, yeah, the royalty is really crapping all over you right now, but you know, they were anointed by God to be there, and you know, as bad as they treat you, and remember, you will go to the dark regions if you commit suicide. So you got to stick it out, you got to work your fields, you got to go fight in the wars, and you got to do everything you're told. But don't worry, when you get to heaven, you'll get wings and a harp and marshmallows and raisins and who knows what. And those people who abused you in this life, they're going to be really, really punished. So just bear with your suffering in silence, because after you're dead, it's all going to be fixed.
Right.
And, it's just designed to brainwash people into sitting still, paying, you know, huge amounts of taxes, sending their kids off to die in wars, and do as they're told without complaint until they die and they get out of the way.
And you're absolutely right. And the thing is, but it's hard to disprove, which is why they use that technique. Nobody can prove what happens after death was not true what they were selling them, so that was a great ploy. But we can at least prove to people that there is no justice in this particular life. It was using my reasoning that I explained earlier. But you brought up another subject that I also have an issue with, this whole thing about suicide. The person has to be crazy or mentally ill or whatever. I think this whole thing of sin for committing suicide was to commit to, was to prevent. Like, you know, they needed those like slaves and stuff to mine that gold. And a lot of those Columbus, they, rather than be slaves, they really believed in give me liberty or give me death, and they would drown their children and themselves. And you can't have the slaves that you need for labor killing themselves. So they told them that if they killed themselves, there was a worse fate waiting for them than the fate they were suffering now on the other
side
to preserve the labor pool. That's
exactly right. That's exactly what that prohibition was about. The church was simply a system of control to keep the slaves in line. Oh, you can't go up against the king, because then you're going up against God. And you're going to go to the dark regions where you're going to burn and burn and suffer torture till the end of time, as George Carlin used to say. But he loves you, and he needs your money. All right, that's the end of... Okay, Renee, we got to take a break here, and we'll be back after these words from the sponsors. Stick around, Renee. We'll talk a little bit more on the other side of the ads. So, stay tuned, folks. We're going to stop for some commercials. If you want to call in, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We will be right back.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about Barack Obama's first 100 days in office and how little, really, anything substantive has changed in our country. For example, yesterday there was a story where the United States, under orders from Barack Obama, staged drone missile attacks into Pakistan. The death toll now is 21. There is, again, no evidence that any real meaningful targets were hit. They're saying, oh, it's Al-Qaeda. We're in there, Al-Qaeda, and we're shooting at Osama bin Laden. And I guess the theory is that if you kill all 6.5 billion people on Earth, sooner or later you will get the one guy that you want to get. Now, interestingly enough, a story just came out where the GOP is now being very critical of Barack Obama's attacks into Pakistan, which is nice, except I don't recall them making such a huge fuss when it was Bush with his finger on that little red button flinging missiles at people. But the bottom line is we have our new president of the United States. He's using the same old, tired, worn out, already discredited excuses to go attack other people. It's Al-Qaeda, also known as the toilet. It's Osama bin Laden, who has been dead since the end of 2001. What change? I'm not seeing any change. It's the same hoaxes, the same lies, and the same belligerent military policy to kick up a war someplace. It may be as cynical as simply giving the media something to look at besides Gaza. It could be just that simple. Now, we're finding out today about Barack Obama's much-promised economic stimulus package, and, of course, we know the U.S. government has been just handing billions and trillions of dollars to big corporations and banks, which are still failing despite that, by the way, and investment companies. So finally, we're beginning to find out what the bailout is going to be for we, the American people, who are at the bottom of the pyramid called the economy. And it turns out there are going to be no rebate checks. The government is going to reduce the withholding tables so that the average American will now take home an extra $10 per paycheck. That's your bailout. $10 per paycheck. You're going to get to take home more. And by the way, doesn't mean you get to keep it. Because next year, unless they change the tax rates themselves, it'll come out of your refund. They're letting you keep $10 per paycheck more this year, but it doesn't mean you get to keep it permanently. It's like the rebates that we got last year and in 2002. We still had to pay it back the next tax year. This is Barack Obama's idea for stimulating the economy, and it gets right down to the fundamental flaw in this whole bailout strategy. Our Federal Reserve system of debt-based money works only when an ever-expanding pool of borrowers is found to sign those notes saying, I promise to work for 30 years to pay you 5 times more money than the house I'm living in actually cost, so that the Federal Reserve can create that money out of thin air to put into circulation. That's the way the system is set up. It's legalized counterfeiting is really what it is. And the problem is that it stops working when people stop borrowing. So for the last 4 or 5 months, we've seen the United States government as the economy staggers. And by the way, this was done to us deliberately. And if you're one of those people out there who's struggling to keep your home, struggling to keep your business running, believe me, I empathize with what you're going through, and I want to remind you, you did not do anything wrong. I know the media is trying to blame the whole mess on those dastardly subprime mortgage people who borrowed money that they couldn't afford to pay back on homes that really they had no business living in. You know, they should be living in small shacks. That's where those kind of people should be living. And what everybody keeps forgetting is at the time these subprime mortgages were being made, and yes, there was a little bit of reckless behavior on the part of the mortgage lenders themselves who just wanted to get the money out there performing. But at the time these mortgages were made, the people who took these loans out to buy their homes were able to make the payments because they had high-paying jobs. And then all of a sudden, the U.S. government, in either a deliberate act of sabotage or an act of incredible short-sightedness and stupidity, started giving out tax breaks to American corporations to make it easier, indeed encourage them to send high-paying manufacturing jobs to other countries. And for the first few corporations that did this, it was a windfall. Their cost of product went down, along with the quality of the product, but hey, who cares? And their profits went up, and the stockholders were happy, and the executives all got huge bonuses. And it looked really good. And then as more and more of these companies in the United States started doing the same thing, all of a sudden we began to see this strange phenomenon. People stopped going to the store. for anything other than the necessities. And, you know, we talk about the very, very high unemployment numbers, but that really conceals a bigger problem. And that is that there are people who are working today, but they're only making maybe 60, 70%, even less than that, 50% of what they were making this time last year. Because they've lost their high-paying jobs, and I get so many emails from the company I've worked with for the last 20 years. They have just let us go. Without any warning, we're gone. We're out of here. And they have to go take a job door greeter at the local Walmart where they're making minimum wage. And the government says, well, they're working. Everything's fine. No, it isn't. Because they can't sustain the debt levels they signed on to at a time when they had the high-paying job. So the government took away these high-paying jobs and made it advantageous for these corporations to send them to other countries. And that's when it all began to fall apart. And so here we have more short-sightedness. They're looting the American public treasury to pour in money at the top of the economic system, trickling down. And there really isn't a credit crisis anymore. There's a lot of money out there. It's just nobody wants to borrow it. Now, the government's trying to borrow it on our behalf to keep the system going, but that's beginning to fall apart. We're seeing more banks fail because nobody is borrowing the money that's been put into them to pay back at interest. And that's really what's bringing the whole thing down. And nobody is borrowing it because nobody has got a job with which to repay it. And unlike the government, and unlike these big financial institutions who've got their little bailout parachutes on, we, the American people, have to live within our means. We have to be frugal. We understand we can't spend more money than we've got. That's reality for those of us at the bottom of the economic pyramid. Now, the government, of course, ever since 1913, routinely they spend more money than they've got. They just have the Federal Reserve printed up. It becomes part of the national debt that you, the American people, are expected to pay off somewhere down the road. Now, what is going on right now, our economy is at the stage of like a farmer who's got a horse and a wagon, and he's driving the horse up the hill, and as the horse goes up the hill, they're throwing more and more rocks into the back of it. And you reach the point where the horse can't pull it anymore, and the farmer's only solution is to whip the horse a little bit harder. He doesn't think about taking those rocks out. And we're finally beginning to see some commentators who say that the problem with the economy isn't that the banks have run out of money or claim to be running out of money. The problem is that the ordinary working-class American people, we don't have high-paying jobs anymore. And that was a government policy of the previous administration, and we are not seeing the new administration even acknowledge that failing, let alone begin to attempt to correct it. We're hearing about more bank failings, and we're hearing about, oh, we must have more money. Fannie Mae just came back for another $30 billion to put into the coffers. But the reality is that every economy in history rests on the strength of the earning ability of the working class people. That's the foundation, because labor must precede capital. Our system here in the United States, it's all printed paper money. And it exists only to be loaned out to enslave you to that debt. And people are saying, I don't want to be a slave to debt anymore, and I'm not going to borrow it, and the system's unraveling. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
Which means... They still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org.
Woman, Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. This is the What Really Happened show, and that song is by Tanea Crone. She's up in Canada from her album Kaleidoscope, and we are getting more and more bits and clips of music that the artists very graciously give us their permission to use as bump music here on the show. And, of course, the regular show bumps are by my wife, Claire, who is a composer in her own right. And got a couple more things to talk about the economy and Barack Obama, mostly about the economy, and then as we go into hour two of our show, and a reminder if you're listening over GCN to switch to channels two and four for the second hour of the show, we're going to be talking about the situation in Israel and Gaza and the firestorm that has erupted around the BBC's refusal to carry a program raising aid money to assist the survivors of Israel's invasion and attack. And this has created quite a problem for the BBC in more ways than just the outcry, because it has exposed in Great Britain the extent to which their society has been subverted by Israel. This is nothing new for us here in the United States of America, but apparently the people of Britain hadn't quite twigged to it yet, and now all of a sudden they're waking up and saying, wait a minute. So we're going to be getting into that hour, too. All right, looking at our economy, as we come out of what was a very disastrous Christmas shopping season, and we know it's hard to get really accurate numbers. Everybody's fudging the numbers to suit their agenda. Publicly traded retailers don't want to admit it was as bad as it was, because that'll trigger further stock sell-offs. And it's a very, very ugly situation out there. But the best measure of how bad retail is doing is looking at how many stores have closed or are closing. We're in the final weeks of the going out of business sale by Circuit City. They're closing all of their stores. It's just going away. Sharper Image, except for a mail order division, that is pretty much gone. They're selling some of their branded products through other stores now. And it's really an ugly situation, and the inevitable result of this is that we are seeing more and more commercial real estate sitting empty, high vacancy rates at the malls, large purposed retail buildings. We had CompUSA went out of business this last year, and at least here on Oahu, the two buildings that they occupied, one in downtown Honolulu and one right here in Pearl City, remain empty to this day. These are huge buildings, a lot of negative cash flow going out here. And what this means is we're coming up on a second real estate crash hitting the United States. This will be commercial real estate, because without tenants in them paying the rent, these mortgages and these fundings, these loans are going to start collapsing. And these are some big-ticket loans. It's not like a home where it's maybe, you know, $400,000 or more. We're talking multi-million-dollar loans. $20 million a pop are going to start collapsing. So we've got a second round of real estate crashes ready to come. And, basically this last year, we lost an estimated 1,120,000 retail jobs. Now, part of it is because more and more commerce is done online. And I'm a big fan of computers when they work. I actually don't like buying things online, because I'm an old-fashioned guy. I want to go into a store, and I want somebody there at the counter who knows the product and can answer my questions, let me touch it and feel it and judge its quality for myself, and answer some questions about its usability, and then I will pay the extra uplift for that service, take the product home. And I do miss that. And I think one of the reasons Circuit City did go out of business is that earlier last year, they let all of their experienced, knowledgeable sales staff go and replace them all with minimum wage sales clerks who knew enough to stick a price tag on a box and otherwise were completely clueless about the products they were selling. I remember going in and asking about, you know, a camcorder and whether it was Firewire capable, and the clerk just looked at me with this completely blank expression on their face, you know, and okay, fine. And, you know, he said, well, can we look on the box? I said, yeah, I can do that myself. What, you know, I don't need you for that. So that was one problem. And the other is that as retailers were struggling to keep their sales figures up, they abandoned quality products that cost more to simply get the lowest priced goodies they could in there to lure more people back in there. And this is the shoddyizing, if you will, of America. And two issues I have with that just out of my own home experience here. This last year we had a component in one of our toilets rotted away and it was leaking. So wanting to curtail water waste, went down to the hardware store and could not find the same replacement part. They had a new brand of parts that weren't quite exactly the same. So I said, okay, I'll get that. And yes, it had a very good price, but I could just see, like, looking at it in the box, it just looked very, very cheaply made. And sure enough, after only 4 months, it's falling apart and the toilet's leaking again. So now I got to go do this all over again. The same thing, I went and bought a three-hole punch because our old one had started to rust here in this ocean climate here on Oahu. And I walked in and they had a selection of four three-hole punches on the shelf. They were falling apart right on the shelf in the store. That's how flimsy they were. And I had to go to like three different stores before I finally found a three-hole punch that was as durable as the one we had just had rust on us. And I paid as much for this three-hole punch as my first car cost back when I was 18 years old. I'm going to talk about the devaluation of the dollar. And then finally, the one that is really very annoying is, again, earlier last year, we had what's called a bug light. You've seen them if you live in the country. It's a light that attracts bugs, and there's this little metal screen around it, and as the bugs fly through the screen, it zaps them. And our old one burned out, so I went to buy a new one, and I noticed every store around here was carrying a new product line. It was all the same company, and very good price, very good markup on the thing, and okay, it looks all right. But as it turns out, looking at this bug light, I noticed the little metal screen, the wires were spaced much further apart than they had been before. And the sales clerk said, oh, well, that's a scientific thing, and they know it's better and lets the bugs through to their deaths a lot more. And I said, I'm sorry, the gaps between those wires look bigger than a mosquito. How is the connection supposed to be made? And the guy said, well, I don't know, but this is what our buyers are saying we're selling now. And so I shrugged and I bought one, and sure enough, the bug zapper doesn't work. We've got a mosquito problem, especially after the rains. And I have a paper plate underneath this bug light to collect what it's killing. And I haven't had to empty that paper plate yet. And the reasoning is because they have value engineered. That's the polite term for it. They've cheapened these units to get the price down. And that means they're only putting in half as many of the little metal wires for the grid. And you can see on the little stamped plastic frame the slots where the other wires used to go. But they've taken out half the wires because that means they only have to buy half as much metal to make the product. And they put it together and they put it at the store and they say, hey, our price is down and our sales are up, therefore all is well. And it's not just these examples. We're seeing this in all kinds of sloppy software from Microsoft. Look at Vista. Now they're having to lay 5,000 people off. And, you know, my message to the retailers is just getting prices down lower isn't the key to building customer loyalty, because we want to believe that we can go to a store, and I'm willing to pay more to get a durable quality product. I really am. I'll have fewer products as the economy tightens, but I'd rather have a few things that work really well than having to buy things over and over again because they're so cheap, they fall apart. you know, computer monitors that last maybe 2 days past the warranty. That's becoming quite common. Nonstick fry pans where the nonstick coating is peeling off after only a month. We're seeing a lot of this. It's the shotification of the United States. We're going to take a break here for some news. We'll be back with hour two of our show after the news and words from our sponsors. So until then, aloha, America.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to hour two of our show today. Our continuing here on Saturday, continuing the news. A special shout out to all of our ground affiliates who join us for the second hour. And a friendly reminder that we talk about the really interesting and fun stuff during hour number one. Our phone number, as always, is 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. Jared is answering the phones today and dealing with issues in the control room. And this hour, we're going to lead off talking about the recent invasion and conquest of Gaza by Israel, the aftermath which continues to really show the world what has really been going on for all these decades that Israel continues to encroach on Palestinian land. And I want to start by reading an email that I just got from a listener. It says, "Am I being paranoid? Last week, the BBC showed a five-part dramatization of the diary of Anne Frank. Today, the first two parts are being repeated on BBC Two in a primetime slot. Tonight, also on BBC Two, there is a documentary called Paperclips about the pupils of a school in Tennessee who, in 1998, decided to collect one paperclip for each of the 6 million Jews murdered by the Nazis. If you go to the BBC homepage, you will see the featured program is Archive Witnessing the Holocaust, comprising a series of 17 TV and radio programs about the concentration camps and the Final Solution. It isn't a special anniversary about the Holocaust, is it? Why are all these programs being shown now and repeated and all on BBC channels? Please tell me I'm delusional in suspecting that these have been deliberately scheduled months in advance to be broadcast at exactly this time. No, you are not being paranoid and delusional. We have been seeing here on American TV, on History Channel Discovery, just all kinds of shows waving Nazis at us. We even had an article that was posted at What Really Happened the other day about reminding us all about Dr. Joseph Mengele and his experiments on people down in Brazil. And of course, other commentators have pointed out that this holiday season here, we had an unending series of films about the Holocaust and all of this terrible stuff all over again, the flagship project being Defiance. And yeah, it's not by coincidence. This war, we know, has been planned for quite some time. Israel covets Gaza. Has nothing to do with Hamas rockets, has nothing to do with anything. Israel covets the land. They covet the property of their neighbors, and they want it. They want the natural gas off the coastline. They want the fishing grounds. They want the land. It's a very expensive piece of land if it's developed. It's beachfront property on the Mediterranean. The whole purpose of the blockade, of starving the people of Gaza, they want to make their lives so miserable that they will accept being transferred someplace else, which is a violation of the Geneva Conventions and a violation of the UN Charter. But Israel wants to do it anyway. That is why in the aftermath of this latest operation where Israel broke the ceasefire on November 4th, then imposed an absolutely total starvation blockade, collective punishment, again a war crime, then attacked with white phosphorus into residential neighborhoods, bombing schools, mosques, hospitals. The purpose is to drive the Gazans out because Israel wants that land. They covet that property. That's what they want. And so, yeah, Israel has tried to set a propaganda stage where what they're doing is somehow seen as justified and just. And they have failed miserably. And more to the point, the sheer effort they put into this public relations program is simply calling attention to itself, which brings us back to the BBC. And by the way, as a side note, before we go any further with this thing, I checked the box office on Defiance, and it's not good. It is not good at all. People aren't going to see that movie. And the reason is very simply. First of all, we're all burned out. We're burned out on Nazis and Holocaust and all the rest of the stuff. We have grown up with having this stuff shoveled at us constantly. This is something that happened in the middle of, actually the first half of the last century. Okay? It is history from before most of us here were born. We were not alive back then. We couldn't do anything about what those jerks in the fancy uniforms and Sieg Heiling were doing. They were bad people. No argument. Hitler was a total jerk. No argument. We agree, okay? Let's move on. We have crimes against humanity taking place today. We have genocides taking place today. We have an aggressive, belligerent, nuclear-armed military power trying to project itself into other people's lands right now that we can and should deal with today. And so I'm not surprised that these Holocaust movies and TV shows are not doing very well. All the more so because people are recognizing it is part of the propaganda to perpetually portray Israel as a poor, helpless victim clinging to survival by their fingernails and 200 nuclear warheads. And people are tired of it. They're burned out on it. And even so with this film Defiance, because, you know, I have to grant a little bit of a kudos to Daniel Craig himself, because when he was talking about this movie on the Daily Show with Jon Stewart, who's another one of my icons that I just applaud so much, Daniel Craig said, well, yeah, it is a sort of fictionalization of the story because these weren't really good people. The story makes heroes of them because they were saving Jewish victims from the Nazis. And, yeah, that's a good thing to do. Nobody's going to argue with that. But these same people also shopped Poles to the Soviets who killed them in the thousands. And this is like, it's not important. They're Polish people. The fact that they got killed, you know, by the hero of our story is kind of irrelevant. And that kind of bias, when it comes out, I mean, the government of Poland came out and officially complained and said, these people weren't heroes. You know, they helped the Soviets commit genocide against Polish people. So why are you making them into heroes? And people picked up on that. And mostly it's just, you know, what they're seeing now going on in Gaza is so at odds with this media image that Israel tries to craft for itself, and people are finally having to deal with that disconnect. And they're realizing it's just the constant sale. We are the victims. We are helpless. Everything we do to make sure that the Nazi horrors never happen again is justified, even as Israel itself commits the same kind of horrors. So, yeah, there has been a flood of Holocaust and Nazi program in theaters and TV. It's part of the ongoing propaganda. And I think the box office numbers of Defiance are indicating people just aren't falling for it anymore. And certainly if you go out on the websites of the major media and read the comments that are being put up at a lot of stories that are out there, it's definitely we're seeing the collapse of this facade of victimhood that Israel has committed its atrocities from behind for all these decades. Wired ran a story. It was a very obvious, gratuitous puff piece in which they tried to reassure everybody that, yes, Israel was being very careful about where it was placing its bombs during this last operation. And if you go down and you read the comments section, and I'm hoping the comments section is still there because these comment sections have a habit of disappearing when they get too strongly anti-Israel. But if you go down and you read the comments, it's just, you know, there's some very obvious shills in there saying, yes, the Palestinians should be killed, they should get out and everything. But for the most part, you're reading opinions of ordinary people who are saying, you know, this was not just, it was not justified. And the story trying to say how hard it is for the Israelis to pick valid targets really doesn't make it look any better. It really doesn't at all. I mean, Hitler kept insisting he was only shooting at combatants as he rolled across Europe. So we've heard these kind of lies before. It's classic, traditional, if you will, war propaganda. So anyway, we're getting back to BBC. There is a group, a charity group, an umbrella group in Great Britain called DEC. And it is an umbrella for some dozen charities that do good work throughout the world and the Mideast. They have had a 40-plus year agreement with BBC that BBC will run their fundraising programs. In this case, when they decided they wanted to do a fundraising program to get food and medicine and supplies for the people of Gaza to rebuild their lives, the BBC refused. the BBC went out and then arm-twisted all of the other British media to say, oh, no, no, you can't run a fundraiser for the suffering people of Gaza because you wouldn't be impartial. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. We'll toss in $100 for that girl who got her hair mussed in Israel as a, you know, to get her hair redone, and that'll make it impartial. We're going to talk about this when we come back from these commercials because this has turned out to be a huge, huge PR disaster for BBC. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. We're talking about the aftermath of Israel's invasion into Gaza. And we're talking about the humanitarian crisis that is there despite the official denials of the government of Israel. Even though Israel has claimed the military objectives have been accomplished. Israel is refusing to open the border crossings to allow food and fuel and construction supplies and medicines to enter into Gaza. As you know, Israel has routinely blockaded the boats coming from the Free Gaza group. Israel refused to allow the Iranian aid ship to dock. Israel continues to refuse entry by United Nations aid workers or anybody else, and is ignoring even a call from Barack Obama to allow the border crossings to open. And you need to remember that it was the failure to open the border crossings which was a major factor to the collapse of the previous ceasefire, because for 6 months we had a ceasefire, and the deal was, Hamas would stop shooting rockets, which they did, and in exchange, Israel would relax the border crossings to make it easier for Gazans to come and go and get supplies into Gaza, which Israel did not. They didn't keep their half of the bargain, which seems to be a perennial problem in dealing with Israel. Even David Ben-Gurion said he couldn't understand why any Arabs would agree to a deal with Israel. It just didn't make sense because, you know, Israel was just taking their land, and there was no reason for the Arabs to be comfortable with that. And he was right. He was a smart guy. So, the tunnels are back in operation, and they're bringing in food and medicine and school supplies and construction materials and replacement animals for the Gaza Zoo, which got shot up as well. Apparently, some of the IDF soldiers were playing target practice with the monkeys. Now, better the monkeys than little kids, but I guess the little kids got shot up as well. So, anyway, Israel's goal is to enforce the starvation of the people of Gaza, to make their lives such hell on earth that they will accept relocation out of Gaza. And remember, the reason they're in Gaza in the first place, these are the people who got driven out of their homes near Jerusalem. And Israel said, well, you can go on down, live down there in Gaza. Nobody wants that piece of land. And all of a sudden, they discovered gas deposits there. And it is valuable real estate, being close to the beach there. And so now Israel wants to push the Gazans out of there so they can take over and annex that piece of land. It's just greed. And in order to accomplish that, they have to keep up the policy of starvation of the Gazan people. And that's why, even in the aftermath of this latest battle and possibility of war crimes charges based on the collective starvation of the people, Israel is enforcing this. So this gets us back to Great Britain and the BBC. And the BBC opposed running this fundraiser for Gazan charities, saying that it would make BBC appear to be impartial. Or not lose their sense of impartiality. And what that basically meant is the BBC's official explanation is we can't run a fundraiser for Gaza without running an equivalent fundraiser for the victims of Hamas in Israel. Of course, the immediate problem is you can't find that many victims of Hamas in Israel compared to what happened in Gaza. We have already put up comparison photos where, you know, the Hamas attacks on Israel, which was stupid, politically stupid, if Hamas did them. considering how ineffective these rockets are. I am personally of the opinion that most of these rockets fired from Gaza into Israel are fired by Israeli agents and sympathizers and collaborators. But BBC refused to run this charitable fundraiser for the victims of Gaza, and steadfastly is refusing to do so. Now, the other British media that had originally joined with BBC in refusing this show have now reversed their decisions and have said correctly that we don't need to take sides on the original cause of the war. We can remain impartial about that, which means not offending Israel, and still recognize that there is a great deal of human suffering by the non-combatants in Gaza who have a basic human right, Universal Declaration of Human Rights. They have a right to food and water and medicine and the basic necessities of life. And so some of these shows are going to be running these fundraising appeals. BBC still refuses to do so. Members of the British government are putting pressure on the BBC to change their mind and have gone so far as to come out and say point blank that Israel is simply knuckling under to pressure from the Israeli government. And the longer they stall on this, the more obvious it becomes that the British media, at least the British Broadcasting Corporation, is just as much compromised and subverted by the government of Israel as the American media has been. And as I said in the last hour, you know, American observers, the smarter American observers, know that this has been going on for a long time. But this is kind of a new thing for the British people to be recognizing, and they're waking up and saying, what is going on here? And so this is continuing to build, and it's probably going to turn into a real public relations disaster for the BBC, and also for Lloyds Bank, which shut down their clearing account for some of the Gazan charities as well. So it's a policy of starvation of the Palestinian people in order to steal their land. And the BBC and various other groups that are supporting them in it, they're a party to the crime. And it is a war crime to collectively starve a population. It is a war crime. Now, after weeks of denying and evasion and lying and even an absurd claim that Hamas had used white phosphorus on themselves to make Israel look bad, the IDF has finally admitted using white phosphorus shells in the Gaza Strip. With tons and tons of photographic evidence, and with the remains of the actual shells showing the Made in USA label and the lot numbers and the tracking numbers that allowed where I got distracted by a comment from the control room. They've got the remains of the white phosphorus shells that allow the tracking of where these munitions came from, the United States, and where they were used, Israel, and on whom. So it kind of reminds me of that old story about George Washington and the cherry tree, where we're all taught in school and the kids, and he says, Father, I cannot tell a lie, which, you know, he's standing there next to a dead cherry tree, and he's holding an axe in his hand, and I think what he really would have said is, well, I cannot tell a lie. So admits to doing the wrong. And that's kind of the situation where Israel is. There's evidence of white phosphorus all over the place and all over the bodies of the victims. And now Israel's saying, well, yes, we may have done it a little bit. You caught us. Okay, we were bad. By the way, the story about George Washington and the cherry tree, it never really happened. It was a political campaign piece of propaganda. Yeah, they were lying to us back in 1779. So deal with it. It's been going on all along. All right, we're going to take a break here and get on to some other stories about what's been going on over the Middle East. And remember, you paid for all of this stuff, so ought to make you prouder in heck to hear what's been going on over there with your money. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
We will not go down in the night.
tonight. Oh, that's such a lovely, lovely song, and we're going to keep that in the rotation for a while here. Okay, we're here talking about Gaza and Israel, and I want to go back a little trip down memory lane, back to when Ariel Sharon, before his stroke, and he was calling the shots, and along with a lot of the things he said, such as, we the Jewish people control America, and the Americans know it, we certainly do now, especially after Olmert basically repeated the same thing with his story about calling George Bush in the middle of George Bush's presentation and ordering George Bush to order Condoleezza Rice to abstain from voting on the UN resolution Condoleezza Rice had herself had helped write. So, and now the people in Great Britain are beginning to realize the extent to which their government and their media has been subverted. And I use that word deliberately because I remember when I was a kid, everyone was always talking about subversion, subversive activities. We've got to get the subversives, commie subversives, and all the rest of that stuff the military-industrial complex was throwing at us to get our taxes and our kids away from us for the endless wars and stuff. Well, we've got subversives now. And they're very obvious now. And that's the good news out of this last situation, is the extent to which these subversives have co-opted our media and our government is now becoming very, very obvious. And, you know, subversives, like traitors, they only are able to succeed if people don't believe they're really there in the first place. You know, and it's like being a magician. You know, once the audience sees where the rabbit comes from, they don't go back to believing you can do magic. You know, once you know there is no Santa Claus, you don't go back to believing that there's one. It's a one-way thing. Now that we have seen what Israel is really all about, we're not going to go back to the crafted image that we have been sold for the last several decades. No matter how hard they push and no matter how much money they spend, you know, the mask has fallen away. And we're seeing the reality underneath. And it's not a pleasant one, especially because we've been paying for it. And not just us. If Israel is doing it to our country, what other countries are they doing it to? I don't think it's unique just to the United States that, you know, we have AIPAC and spy scandals and billions of our tax dollars going to Israel and billions more of our tax dollars to buy weapons to give to Israel. I don't think it's unique just to us. We know that Germany has been giving Israel submarines. So there's something definitely out of whack there. So let's see. The International Atomic Energy Agency, which is the inspection and enforcement arm of the United Nations to enforce the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, has said it will open an investigation into Israel's alleged use of depleted uranium during the 22-day offensive in the Gaza Strip. Okay, now here's the issue. We're talking about these weapons that Israel is using. We talk about white phosphorus, and we know they get that from the United States. And maybe, just maybe, they're getting these depleted uranium munitions from the United States as well. I think we need to find that out. Now, first of all, depleted uranium is used as a munition because it is harder and denser than lead, and therefore carries more kinetic energy to the target. It penetrates further than lead. It is useful against armor. Now, the Gazans don't have armor. They don't have bunkers. They don't have tanks. They don't have armored personnel carriers. They have none of that stuff. So the use of depleted uranium shells on a civilian population is a questionable activity. And all the more so because when depleted uranium munitions are used, when they're employed, when they impact their target, they vaporize. And you have all of this depleted uranium. It oxidizes immediately, makes a very fine dust. When the wind blows, it kicks up, and you breathe it into your lungs. And once you get this depleted uranium dust in your lungs or into your gut, you never get rid of it. Now, depleted uranium is an alpha emitter, which means if it's outside your body, it's actually harmless because that epithelial layer on your skin, that thin layer of already dead cells that is on the outside of your skin, I know it's gross and icky to talk about, but that's exactly what that is. That layer of cells will stop the alpha radiation. And this is why the alpha emitters in your compact fluorescent light bulbs, the alpha emitters in Coleman lantern mantles, and alpha emitters in smoke detectors are not harmful to you, because it's outside your body. But if you breathe any of these materials, the ash from a used Coleman mantle or the dust from depleted uranium munitions, once you breathe it into your body and you don't have that protective layer stopping you and it's in there constantly, it's going to cause problems. Everyone remembers back when they were talking about cigarettes causing cancer. And the tobacco industry came out and said, well, tobacco does not cause cancer. And technically they were correct. It wasn't the tobacco. It was the very inexpensive mineral-based fertilizers they were growing the tobacco plants in, which contained polonium, which is a radioactive mineral. So the fertilizer was radioactive, and so the tobacco plants were radioactive. And they put it in the cigarette, you'd inhale it into your lungs. And that was what caused the cancer epidemic associated with the cigarettes. It wasn't the tobacco. People who were smoking pipes or they were smoking the European organically grown tobacco cigarettes didn't have anywhere near the medical problems that American cigarettes did. So the use of this depleted uranium in Gaza appears to have no other purpose than to shower the area with radioactivity, to cause the same kind of medical problems among the Gazan people that we have seen among the people of Iraq who are living in areas where the United States employed these depleted uranium munitions. So this is why the IAEA is looking at this, because it's an inappropriate use of a munition in a civil population area. But more to the point, if Israel is not getting the depleted uranium from the United States, where is it coming from? Because depleted uranium is what is left over after you enrich uranium, either for reactor fuel or for nuclear weapons. Now, we know Israel has got this policy of deliberate ambiguity. Do we have nuclear weapons or don't we? We're not going to say we do because we're a peace-loving people, but you better not mess with us because we might have them. Of course, we know that they have them. It's been admitted to several times by members of Israel's government who then back up and say, well, I didn't really mean to say that, and you're a dirty anti-Semite if you ever point that quote out ever again. But we know from the photographs of their weapons factory that Mordechai Vanunu smuggled to the British press many, many years ago that, yes, Israel has a clandestine nuclear weapons factory underneath the Dimona reactor, which is probably why Israel's always screaming that everybody else around them is doing it. You know, yes, we've got a nuclear weapons lab, but Iraq was doing it, and Iran is doing it, and that makes it okay. And they go in and they bomb Iraq's reactor. We go in after the invasion. We check it out. No clandestine weapons lab. And the IAEA has been looking at Iran's power station, and that's all they can find there, a power station. There's no clandestine weapons lab there. The only clandestine nuclear weapons lab in the Mideast is the one that Israel owns. Now, the United Nations, of course, is very upset with Israel, and frankly, I don't blame them. During the Lebanon War of 2006, Israel was shelling the UN observer stations. They killed a lot of UN personnel. Israel's saying, well, it was an accident. We didn't know they were UN. You know, we just didn't see that big UN symbol all over everything before the bomb hit. And then during this last Gaza operation, of course, Israel shelled with white phosphorus a couple of United Nations schools for the kids. They set fire to the place. They burned them right to the ground. Then Israel shelled the UN's main food distribution site that was giving food to the Gazan people to keep them fed despite the blockade. That got burned to the ground. The United Nations has now suggested Israel pay for all that destroyed food and supplies and medicines. No doubt Israel will ask the United States taxpayer, you, to foot that bill as well. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with the last segment of our show today. And again, if you want to join us on the air for this last segment, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We will be right back.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Well, welcome back to the show here. We're going to get off Israel and Gaza for this last segment here because I'm sick of reporting about it. You're sick of hearing about it. And it's, you know, but as long as Israel continues to act like a jerk internationally, they are unfortunately going to attract a lot of press. And we must deal with it because there is so much spin and propaganda being poured upon us about how wonderful Israel is and how absolutely irrelevant everybody else is, that we do have to counter that. And I just got a very nice email from a listener that I will put up on the letters page at What Really Happened After the Show, saying some very complimentary things about us. But I know we've got a caller on the line who wants to talk about global warming, and we'll get to him in just a minute. Before that, there was an interesting story happened this last week. Scientists are getting ready to exhume the body of Galileo to check his DNA to see if possibly the vision problems he had affecting some of his findings might have been hereditary, if he had some congenital defects in his eyes, which might have actually prompted his interest in lenses, because the invention of the telescope came out of the eyeglass industry. A gentleman by the name of Jan Lippershey, who was an eyeglass maker, was the first to take a positive lens intended to cure farsightedness and match it up with a negative lens intended to cure nearsightedness, and realize that you could make things look larger through a combination of the two. And Galileo experimented with his own lenses and developed his own telescope, which he turned on the sky and got an extraordinary amount of trouble from the church because of what he saw. Now, some of Galileo's eye problems actually came from his astronomy work, because he, unfortunately, like small children and didn't know any better, took a look at the sun through his telescope and saw sunspots. And in trying to see them more clearly and not having proper filtration, really caused himself a lot of eye troubles, which really was a major part of his blindness later on. But these scientists are digging him up, and they're going to check his DNA to see if some of his eye problems were congenital and DNA. And while they've got him up, may I respectfully suggest that they do an autopsy to look at the extent to which he was tortured by the church to force his recantation that the sun was the center of the solar system and that the earth moved around the sun like any other ordinary planet, which was a direct challenge to the church doctrine that the earth was the center of everything and everything else moved around it, because God sits up nights to admire us all. And so I'm hoping that they'll take the opportunity to do that. All right, we're going to go to the phones. We've got Mike in Georgia. Aloha, Mike. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Well, basically back to spinning and propaganda, but only this time concerning the validity of the reports on global warming.
Mm-hmm.
And the article that you had that was posted, Is Global Warming Real, by the young lady in Colorado, she cites Christopher's book as the source. He's wrote the review of 2008. And also Cryosphere Today as a site where they're getting some of their climate information.
Mm-hmm.
And also the Senate Minority Report on Global Warming.
Mm-hmm.
I just wondered if you'd like could comment on what your feelings are on the validity of, you know, the Mr. Book, of that site, and your feelings about the report.
Well, my feelings about the report, and indeed any report, is you have to be careful that, you know, there isn't an agenda at work. And this goes back to the idea that government, which has really long ago ceased to be of any real practical use to people, they have to constantly invent new problems that they can then sell us the solutions to. And global warming is just the latest one. And we know that Al Gore and his investors, who have already put together the first brokerage to trade these carbon tax cap credits, so they can enronize them and make a lot of money, they have invested $300 million in an advertising campaign to push this idea of global warming. And it's a huge moneymaker for them. We've had reports coming out of Europe where they've already had the cap and tax credit system in place. It's not actually making the environment any better, but it's making the people who have got the brokerages a huge amount of money. It's a profit center. They've invented a product out of thin air that they're buying and selling and making a huge profit on. And it's not a real product. It's a paperwork product. And we create this paperwork problem, and then we'll fix the paperwork for you, and you will give us a lot of money, is really what it comes down to. So we have documented at our website and here on the radio show many times already that the temperature systems being used to prove global warming are compromised by the fact that they're mounted right next to the outflow of air conditioners. I've got this wonderful photo of the temperature measuring system that's at Caltrans headquarters in California. It is sitting right next to a trash incinerator. Gee, I wonder if it's reporting heavier temperature or higher temperatures. We've documented where the newer paints that they're using to paint the enclosures for the temperature sensors on are actually absorbing more infrared and are therefore producing higher temperature readings. So there's a lot of very bad science that goes into this. And if you really want a good insight, you know, we have a culture where we don't appreciate the people we've got till they're gone. And this goes back to Michael Crichton, who wrote a book called State of Fear. You can still get it at Amazon. It's still available in most bookstores. It was an absolutely, absolutely brilliant exploration of the scam behind the climate and global warming people, because they're trying to take what happens naturally. The earth gets warmer, the earth gets colder. The earth gets warmer, the earth gets colder. And repackage it as a crisis that's the fault of human beings, and therefore human beings must cough up the tax money to atone for their sins. And it is nonsense. It's, in many ways, it's functioning like a religion. You are sinners, put money in the plate, and we'll pray for your salvation, is really what it is. Anyway, Mike, we've got to let you go. We've got another caller on the line who wants to talk about depleted uranium. So thank you, Mike, for the call. We're going to go to Sean in Texas. Aloha, Sean. Welcome to the show. Speak your piece.
Hi, Mike. I just wanted to expand a little bit. There are a couple of good videos, or at least two good resources, one of them being a video that is called The Doctor, The Depleted Uranium, and The Dying Children. And it's almost a solid hour, and it's a very thorough, in-depth study of some folks in Europe who themselves began a study, a doctor's study, of the effects of depleted uranium. Needless to say, it's as scary as can be, and the uranium is, in a very subtle way, an extension of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And it's something we've been doing here for 15 years and are continuing to do on a daily basis. The other thing is, I believe her name is Lauren Moret, M-O-R-E-T. She also gets into it quite a bit. But that first video that I said, if you Google The Doctor, The Depleted Uranium, and The Dying Children, it comes up readily, and hopefully while it's still available, folks who have a more in-depth interest in this will take a look.
Well, I'm looking at it right now at the Trap Rock Peace Center and their link, and I'm going to put it up on whatreallyhappened.com as soon as the show is over, because it is an issue. And, you know, I like to joke about it that depleted uranium is the gift that keeps on giving, but it really is. It's very black humor, because once it gets in your body, you know, it is a source of tremendous illness. It is very difficult to clean up when it's been deployed over very, very wide areas. And here's the real kicker. The depleted uranium we've showered all over Iraq, they're already detecting it over Europe and Great Britain. And it's only a matter of time before it shows up here in the United States. Nuclear physicists in the United States are still able to find in the atmosphere, in the dust on the ground, traces of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and all the above-ground testing that was done throughout the 1950s, because each bomb had a unique signature in its fallout. That's what fallout is the ash from a nuclear detonation, and each one has a unique fingerprint in a mass spectrometer. And so this stuff is still out there. It never went away. It takes billions of years for some of these radioactive products to decay away.
Yeah, it's horrific. And, of course, the last thing that still remained unsaid is the effect on the unborn. And that's what this video gets into with with a graphic and thorough
document. It is. It's a genetic insult. Sean, we're out of time here. We've got to go, but feel free to call into the show again. That's it for Saturday. We'll be back Monday again at our usual time and here on GCN. Until then, stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones. Aloha, America.